You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
Is this our first sad music of the season? I can't remember if we've had to bust this one out yet or not. But this was a day for some humble pie for the Denver Nuggets. They were served a nice big slice of that at the hands of the two-time defending champion, Golden State Warriors, who just completely dominated this game from start to finish, literally from start to finish, en route to a 142-111 victory at Pepsi Center to regain the top spot in the Western Conference. But you know what? I walked out of the arena tonight, with I think some good perspective. Nobody thought Denver was better than the Golden State Warriors. Especially at this moment with so many guys just kind of getting back into the lineup and all of the things that were going on. So this was a game that I think provided a nice and healthy sort of reality check for the Denver Nuggets themselves and for Nuggets fans as a whole to kind of step back and look at where they are right now and say, you know, there's still a lot of room for improvement. The top of the NBA, and look, the Golden State Warriors, when they play at their best, and this was one of those games where they were in a zone, they certainly from behind the three-point line were in a groove, you know, they're pretty darn good. And while I still think Denver can reach a level that is at least somewhat comparable to them in moments, there's a lot of lessons they have to learn along the way. So this episode of the show and the first two segments, maybe one segment, not sure how long this one will go. Nobody wants to listen for 30 minutes about all of the things they did wrong. So maybe just one segment. We'll talk about the game and what happened. I'll share a few takeaways in segment two. And then in segment three, I want to address something that a tweet that was sent out by Mike Kliss of Nine News that I think, you know, it left a really bad taste in my mouth, and not for reasons that you might think. So it provides an opportunity to talk about something that's kind of been on my mind, and this was a great chance to kind of get into that whole bag of worms. So, but let's first start with some notes. And if you're new to the show, I'm Adam Mottis, DenverStiffs.com. I like to, instead of just recap the games, you can read our recaps on Denver Stiffs. But for this show, I just want to kind of go through my notebook on things I found interesting. The first thing, the Nuggets' first three possessions in this game, the Warriors got out in transition and were able to get some easy semi-transition or transition baskets, but I thought Denver's first three possessions of this game kind of were indicative of just how clunky things have gotten with this starting lineup that they have. A turnover, there might have been a foul, so Jokic throws a pass to Jamal Murray, who had an inside lane on Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant kind of grabs Murray. Refs don't see it, and it results in a turnover. The next play is a Malik Beasley floater in traffic from like 8 feet, just kind of a terrible shot. And then the third possession, Torrey Craig dribbles off of his foot. And this is just kind of what happens with the Nuggets in the starting lineup a little bit too often. There's just a lot of clunkiness to them, and I've talked about this quite a bit. If you're going to play Torrey Craig, the idea is that Denver can be this great defensive team. Well, the numbers don't bear that out. Torrey Craig plays some nice individual defense, no doubt about it, especially, I think, against backcourt players. But he's pretty ineffective against longer wings. And we've seen this. Kawhi Leonard, I think, absolutely dominated him. And tonight, Kevin Durant started 8 for 8, so he was in such a groove. And Torrey Craig just doesn't really have this length or defensive chops to kind of shut a guy like that down. So if you're going to start a defensive, if you're going to sacrifice some of your offense for defensive purposes, then you better not be susceptible to giving up 51 points in a quarter. I mean, that's, I guess we can just kind of end that sort of point right there. Millsap, I think, really needs to, The lineups with him and Jokic have been really, really good, in large part because of how good defensively they have been. That hasn't been the case over the last couple weeks. But offensively, Millsap, I think, still needs to learn, and the coaching staff can certainly help him figure this out, of just where to be on the court. There was one post up in particular in this first quarter, early on in the first quarter, where Millsap, standing at the top of the key, could have his man Draymond Green. Draymond Green ended up hard doubling Jokic and blocking his shot. But Millsap the whole time stands at the top of the key, and then as his guy goes to help, Millsap backpedals. There's nobody running a break or anything. Millsap backpedals a few feet off of the three-point line. You think, well, even if Jokic wanted to pass to him, he'd be passing to him 40 feet from the basket. So this is just an example. What should have happened on that play and what I would have liked to have seen was for him to set basically a split cut or a split screen for Jamal Murray. So Jamal Murray on the left elbow, Millsap at the top of the key, Jokic on the right block. Set a screen, do something there to make them to punish them for sending that hard double. And Denver, especially with their starting lineup, when they have basically two non-floor spacers and Torrey Craig and Paul Millsap out there, they just don't do a very good job. Too often they stand still and they allow the Warriors to double. So I thought Jokic struggled early on in this game, and there were some turnovers and just some ugly post play. But it's not surprising to me because that's a recipe for bad post play. The Warriors got two offensive rebounds on one possession in this first stretch before the first timeout, and it ended with Golden State getting fouled and knocking one free throw down, then getting another offensive rebound and scoring two, and going up 11-2. And if you know anything about the Golden State Warriors, as good as they are, when they get an 11-2 start, that's when they really are their most dangerous. They are, and this, I don't mean this in a bad way. The Warriors are a fantastic team that I, most of the time, I really enjoy watching. They are a front-running group. They, when they have a lead and they are comfortable, they play more loose. And when they play loose, they are unbeatable. Well, they got loose in this game, up 11-2. And some of that had to do with the bad spacing. Some of that had to do with just Denver being caught flat-footed on some of these offensive rebounds. And once they're up 11-2, they were done. From there, they made their next three-pointer. Next three possessions were all three-pointers. They made them all. And this is what I talk about. They're like a knockout puncher who gets you stunned. Once you're stunned, that knockout puncher is going to start throwing the haymakers, and odds are they're going to land one of them. Well, they landed a bunch of them in this first quarter. To make matters even worse, Nikola Jokic picked up his second foul just 6 minutes into the game. I thought Jokic got rattled in this game, and this is a big test for him because we have seen him rattled in the past. But look, it's humiliating to be down by 20 points in the first quarter. It's humiliating to give up 51 points. And I think for Denver, in a packed arena and a loud arena, there was a little bit of that. There's nowhere to hide. Now, I thought a lot of guys continued fighting, and even Jokic continued fighting. But I just thought that he had a couple of really just bad fouls. His third foul in particular, really, really bad. And some of that came out of, I think, frustration. So the Nuggets scored the basketball in the end of that first quarter. They had 38 points, which 9 times out of 10, maybe 95 times out of 100, that's enough to be up, but they were actually down 13 because they gave up an NBA record 51 points. So the Warriors are on fire. They knocked down 10 three-pointers. I mean, they hit some, like I said, Denver contested some of those shots well, but when you allow a team to get in a groove early, teams just knock down contested shots. So that's what happened. They go 10 of 14 to start, and they're up 13 points. But in that second quarter, I would have brought Jokic back. I know he had the two fouls, but he had been sitting for 6 minutes, and you're at a point, I think 13 points, where the game can go one of two ways. If you can cut that down to 6, 7, 8 points early on in the second quarter, well, now it's anybody's game. You feel good about yourself. Instead, he kept Jokic on the bench, and the Warriors immediately go on a 7-0 run, and now they're up 20. And he brings Jokic in at that point. So it's one of those things where when a guy has two fouls, you leave him out, and more often than not, you end up shooting yourself in the foot. And I thought that's what happened in this game. They just sat him a little bit too long. No idea how Draymond Green didn't get thrown out in that second quarter. Absolutely. The NBA, I don't understand. This is a talking point. Draymond Green has a lot of technicals, but he gets away with murder with berating the officials. We've seen Jokic get thrown out in the past before off of two technicals that nobody even knows what happened. Draymond Green followed Zarba around the court for, like, honest to God, 60 seconds. It just screaming at the top of his lungs and didn't get thrown out. It was really a crazy one. I thought the crowd was great tonight. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later. They really stuck with this team through the ups and downs and really tried to implore them throughout the game. And the Nuggets just getting haymaker after haymaker in that first quarter. But the crowd was still into it and still very much a pro-Nuggets crowd trying to just give it right back to them. And it made me very proud of my city and very proud of the fan base. I thought it was cool. Will Barton continues to look very rusty. He even looked like he lost a little bit of confidence because he had a wide open three at one point in the second quarter that he passed up for no reason. To be expected. I'll start judging Will Barton probably after these next two games. That's when I think my grace period probably lasts another two games. And then I there'll be a lowered expectation, but it'll be one of those things where if he continues to miss some of these easy shots, you say, okay, maybe he needs to be playing even more reduced minutes until he gets his confidence back or whatever. But right now, you roll him out there and he just has to get his legs back, and tonight he didn't quite have them. Jokic's third foul, as I mentioned, was really dumb. Kevin Durant, I thought this was really interesting. Kevin Durant was really trash-talking Jokic in this game. And I think it's good. Part of me wonders, was he just testing the metal? Jokic has responded to those situations, I think, pretty well this season when guys have kind of got at him. But he's never been down 20 points and having somebody talk trash to him. And I just thought his emotions flared up a little bit. And he ends up getting called for a push foul that, to me, was 100% about a lapse of judgment. But that the Nuggets rallied after Jokic went to the bench. The Nuggets actually rallied in large part because Jamal Murray, he shows up for big games, boy. He is a big game player. The more pressure there is, the more he seems to just be about it. But the Nuggets cut the lead to 12, and it honestly felt like this was going to be the greatest game of the year because it felt like, man, everything has gone wrong. They are incredibly on fire, and Denver's within striking distance to make this a 7-point game at the half, which would have felt like a huge win. But there were some unlucky bounces that happened, and this is the game of basketball. Not an excuse, but Barton missed a putback dunk. Paul Millsap missed an alley-oop. There was a bumbled play where the ball just bounced to Golden State in a way that led to a fast break dunk. It was just it was kind of, and you make your own luck. So Denver being down, and I talked about the lack of intensity and focus and those things early on, being down means that you're susceptible. A 7-0 run puts you back down 19, whereas instead of just down 7. So it's not an excuse, but it was one of those things where I thought Denver did such a great job of not losing the rope all the way until that last 2 minutes of the half when the ball just bounced kind of a unlucky way, and the rest is history. So Denver battled. Even in that third quarter, they tried to battle, but this just was not going to be their night. The Warriors, I think, clearly were sending a message, and you know what? There's no denying who the better team was and who the better team is right now. Well, let's look at some takeaways from this game. The Denver Nuggets, my biggest takeaway is this. I'm really high on this team and where they're going, but they are very much on a journey right now. They have not arrived. They are in the process of arriving, and this Nuggets team is good, but they are not the Golden State Warriors, and that was evidence. And even this was a surprise to me. I thought that Denver had a chance to be the number one offense, of course, which, I mean, still a chance. This is the Warriors at their absolute peak, so I don't know if they'll sustain this. But I thought Denver would be the best passing team, but after watching tonight, the Warriors reached a level passing the ball that I don't think Denver can reach. There was four or five possessions tonight where the ball was popping for the Warriors in ways that I don't think I've ever seen for Denver. Denver can be kind of methodical, surgical even with their passing, but there was a couple of plays that were just so quick. The passes were coming so fast and so on target that it was honestly, it was a sight to behold in a weird way, and I know I'm going to get killed for saying this. In a weird way, it was kind of amazing to sit back and watch, sit back and just see this Warriors team and be like, wow, these guys are pretty good, and it's pretty special to be able to get there. But you know what? I think Denver can get to similar heights. I mean, Denver at their best, and I guess this is another thing, another takeaway. Denver needs to get healthy because Denver isn't talented enough to just be this, like, oh, out-talent teams. The Warriors, what's crazy about them is they have the chemistry and the passing and unselfishness at their best, but they also have the talent. They're just this weird combination of having both things. But Denver is a team that I think at their best can be in such a groove, and we've seen it. This year we've seen it for stretches. Last year we've seen it for stretches where they just seem to all be on the same page. But unfortunately, you know, Gary Harris still not back in the lineup. We still only have a one-game sample size of this team with relative health. So that's another takeaway, is that they need to get everybody back and healthy so that they can get several weeks under their belt entering the postseason, hopefully with several weeks, because I think it takes several weeks to get everybody at the top of their game. The Nuggets defense needs to bounce back or else. And this is a big thing, and it was weird. I thought my colleague Harrison Wynn asked a very fair question after the game of Michael Malone about just the defense, and he kind of blew it off. He seemed upset. And look, Malone runs hot after losses especially. But I thought it was a fair question. The Nuggets defense over the last 6 to 8 weeks is just not very good. And tonight they got carved up in part because the Warriors were on fire and they got in transition a lot. But there was a lot of just mental lapses on the defensive end. I mean, the Denver's defense is just nowhere close to what it was at the start of the year. And if they can't get that back, then they're a good but not great team. They're a first-round maybe team. No matter how well they've played to this point or how well they played at the opening part, if their defense remains like it has over the last 8 weeks, this team's ceiling's a lot lower than I think we hoped. The Warriors aren't afraid of the Nuggets. That's another takeaway. I know there was some talk amongst the most zealous Nuggets fans about, oh, man, they don't want any part of us because we have their number. Look, the Golden State Warriors, they do not fear the Denver Nuggets. Maybe they should, or you know, maybe Denver does match up with them tough or whatever, but at their best, they can beat the Denver Nuggets, and that's, I think you just have to take that away from this game. Starting Torrey Craig does not improve the defense. I mean, this is another thing I think we have enough evidence for, and it's not that he's a bad defender. It's just that what he takes away on the offensive end leads to other teams getting more comfortable on that on their offensive end of the floor. So that trade-off just doesn't work. If you are the team's best defender, you're probably not on the floor when you give up 51 points. And then the Nuggets, as I talked about, just vulnerable to long scoring wings. That's a thing that I don't know that Denver is going to have an answer for this year. But it is something, as you kind of look in the horizon, you think, who is it that can stop a KD or a Paul George or a LeBron or a Kawhi on this Nuggets roster? And if they don't have a guy that not can stop but can even just moderately slow down, then maybe there is some type of change that happens. Not that I think Denver will make one this year, but maybe you, going into a summer or something, you look at that and say, this team has a very low ceiling if they cannot defend those types of players at any kind of rate. There was a lot of media there tonight for this game, more than I had ever seen, I think, at Pepsi Center. I think it's more than I'd ever seen. It was wild. A bunch of people I'd never seen before, in ways both good and bad. I mean, there were a lot of fans there. It was a packed house. So there was a lot of stuff going on. Nine News' Mike Kliss took that opportunity tonight for whatever reason. Actually, I know the reason, and we all know the reason. I'll go over it here momentarily, to just kind of poke at Nuggets fans, I guess, and I'll read his tweet here. He said, "We finally pay attention to the Nuggets, and they're getting blown out by at half by Warriors. Can we get back to and I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name, Scangarello Watch, which is basically saying, can we get back to talking about the Broncos?" This is an annoying take. He took the opportunity to try to diminish the Nuggets, and he has an incentive to do this, as does the radio station 104.3 The Fan, who's talked about this quite a bit, that they, you know, for whatever reason, The Fan has refused to invite us on their shows and has sort of talked about the irrelevance of the Denver Nuggets and just kind of not been open to the people covering the Nuggets or just Nuggets fans in general. And there's a reason for this, especially for Kliss. He has an incentive because he follows the Denver Broncos to create this idea that the Broncos are the only team in this town that matter and that nobody else wants to talk about the Nuggets. So he has an incentive to try to push this narrative. This is not the city of Denver that I know. And obviously the Broncos are king. I love the Broncos. My wife is a Bronco nut. But we have an incredibly large and vibrant fan base. I mean, just this last weekend, we packed our watch party so full that people couldn't even get inside the door. We had to turn people away an hour before the event even began. I know that there's a Nuggets fan base out there. Our site, gets tens of thousands of people per day who come to check out the Denver Nuggets. I talk to Nuggets fans every day and from all over the world and every corner of our city. One of the cool things about my job is now I get people stopping by every Nuggets game, stopping by to come say hi to me. And the people that come say hi to me aren't just 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds and, you know, all the same type of person. I get generations of people that come, guys that bring their dad and say, oh, my dad and I listen to the show and we text. In fact, I have to give a shout out to Butch and Kathy. I hate that this is the point I had to give the shout out, but somebody on Twitter sent me a really cool text back and forth that he has with his mom that cited the Locked On Nuggets podcast because they all listened, the whole family listens to it together. I know that there's a fan base of people. So shout out Butch and Kathy. It was your son sent me that text that I thought it was so awesome. Something about, as Mata says, the ball is popping. Oh, it really made my day. They're just all ages, all types of people that like the Denver Nuggets fans. So I know that this lie that certain media outlets are incentivized to perpetuate is exactly that, a lie. It is not true. And there's something, and what's worse, there's something cynical about what guys like Mike Kliss are doing when they say things like this. Now, I don't share my political beliefs very often on the show. In fact, I don't think I ever have. I don't do that on Denver Stiffs or on Twitter. And it's not because I don't have strong opinions about these things. In many cases, I have very strong opinions. And it's not because I think athletes should stick to sports or that reporters should just stick to sports and choose to refrain from political commentary. It's because I have seen that I now have a role as a public figure to a small audience, but to an audience nonetheless, and I take that very seriously. I really feel like I have a platform that provides me an opportunity to spread a little joy and a little passion with the world, and we get to do that at Denver Stiffs in a lot of different ways. Our charity event is one of the coolest things that we do, and it's so cool to see so many Nuggets fans come together for love of the Nuggets to do something good with this world. But it's also, you know, some of my favorite reviews on iTunes and messages I get, emails I get, are the people that say that I make their day a little bit better by getting to share the show, or that I've helped foster a whole new level of passion about the Denver Nuggets. I've talked to people that say, oh, I've been a Denver Nuggets fan for 20 years, but listening to your show makes me even more of a fan because you point out things I didn't even realize, and now I get to like it even more, or you just cover it in a way that is infectious. And that's really, to me, that's really what it's all about. Having something that, I mean, it really, like life is having something that makes you happy and finding ways to share that happiness with the world. We all log on to the internet every single day. I mean, the internet's a part of our lives. And if you're like me, you're on the internet for like 12 hours a day. It's frightening how much it is. But it's part of our lives, and we connect with each other in ways that I think we still don't fully understand or appreciate. But I'm conscious of the fact that when I engage with people online, I try to engage in a way that's positive and just makes the world a little bit better. As I mentioned, I have a passion for the Denver Nuggets and a passion for the game of basketball, and I want to share that with other people, and I want them to be able to feel that passion. And it seems to me, more and more, certainly in this country, but also in this world, we're increasingly susceptible to becoming divided along tribal lines. If you listen to country music and live in the suburbs, drive a pickup truck, you belong in one category. If you listen to hip-hop and live downtown or prefer to take the light rail, you belong in a different category. And I've said this before on this show, and I'm going to say it again. One thing I love about sports is that they're one of the few things in modern society where a city sheds every label and comes together as one group. People of every walk of life come together under one roof to cheer on their favorite team. When the crowd started chanting in the third quarter of this game with the Nuggets down 20, when the crowd just out of nowhere started chanting, "Let's go Nuggets," trying to implore their team to show some fight. Undoubtedly, there were Republicans and Democrats chatting that. There were people of faith, there was rich, there was poor, there was people of every race, and they were all, the entire cross-section of the city of Denver was chanting along together as one body. And it's those moments that I think give you goosebumps and kind of make you think, yeah, sports, you know, that's something worth preserving. That's something worth fighting for. And Mike Kliss, with his tweet tonight about trying to diminish the Nuggets, you know, he wasn't trying to, for any nefarious reasons, divide the city or anything like that. He was doing it for very selfish reasons. He benefits from people not liking the Nuggets because it puts more attention on him covering the Denver Broncos. Just as the fan, I believe, does the exact same thing. They benefit if the Broncos are the only show in town because that's what they're most positioned to cover. But at what cost? Do people like Mike Kliss really care so much about staying on top that they take no pride at all in a team right next door, even though the jerseys say Denver across the chest? Do people like Mike Kliss and the fan care more about tomorrow's ratings than about preserving one of the few things that bind a city together? See, I believe in the power of sports, and I think my life would be a lot less interesting and a lot less fulfilled if it were void of sports. So why attempt to rob someone else of that joy just for personal gain? To me, there's something very cynical about that, and I hope the people of this city, of my city, don't fall for it. I love my Denver Broncos. I love my Colorado Rockies. I love my Colorado Avalanche, and I love my Denver Nuggets. And most of all, I love sharing that passion with every one of you.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.